what you find out in these instances as an MSP, as an IT service provider, is who takes you seriously as a consultant? Who takes you seriously as the MSP? We give great advice. We make great recommendations. And it's the people who have followed it who right now aren't stressing.
This is Frankly MSP, where managed service providers get real.
Hey, this is Jennifer Tribe, and you're listening to episode 64 of Frankly MSP, the podcast for managed service providers who want to boost their productivity, efficiency, and profitability. This is not a drill. Around the globe, coronavirus is putting millions of business continuity plans to the ultimate stress test. Which ones will hold up, and which ones will prove to have fatal weaknesses? Today on the show, I have two guests who are, in their words, ready to roll through this pandemic. I'm joined by Jim Milliken, the founder and CEO of Ashton Technology Solutions, a 24-person MSP based in the Cleveland, Ohio area. And I'm also joined by Travis Grenke, Ashton's operations manager. Originally, Jim, Travis, and I were booked to talk about how Ashton doesn't have much trouble hiring tech staff, even in the current job market, which they attribute to their creative approach to hiring, evaluating, and cultivating team members. It's a really interesting topic, and I hope to get them onto a future episode to talk about that too. But before we could get into that, we got sidetracked. By coronavirus, of course. We recorded this chat on March 13th, 2020. Things were right in the middle of changing rapidly across Canada, the US, and Europe. Spain wasn't on lockdown yet. That would happen the following day, on March 14th. California wasn't on lockdown. Certainly Ohio, where Ashton is headquartered, wasn't on lockdown or shelter-in-place orders. But even on March 13th, there was a sense that big disruptions were on their way. As we spoke, what struck me most about Jim and Travis was how well they'd planned for coronavirus, how well prepared Ashton was. Not because they were psychic and saw this global pandemic coming before anybody else did, but because something like coronavirus has been part of their disaster recovery plans for clients all along. Over the course of this wide-ranging conversation, we talk about everything from the importance of communications and culture during a crisis to why you want to stick to your guns now more than ever. We also take a look at how the world might change on the other side of this pandemic.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avic Networks.
Hi, Travis. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for having us. Looking forward to having a great conversation.
Jennifer, thanks. Appreciate it.
To start, I'd just like to get a sense of what you're seeing and hearing from your clients as we head into this rapidly spreading COVID-19 pandemic. Travis, why don't we start with you?
The big thing in these kinds of situations is not so much the technological hurdle of getting remote access. The bigger question is communications internally and having a business continuity plan in place so that when you do need to call your staff and let them know, hey, an event has occurred, you need to work from home, A, you want to have it tested out ahead of time, but B, you want to have things set up so that there is a plan. You know who's going to be handling the communications. It's in very clear documentation. You've ideally tested this out so you know that your documentation is good. The protocols are good. People know who to call, when to call, who's in charge, who answers questions. When there's a technical problem, how do you contact Ashton or the MSP in general? That's the stuff that actually is the more difficult thing for most organizations to get their head wrapped around. The technical side of things, we've pretty much got that ready to go as is. A lot of organizations have a select few employees or C-level people that are used to working remotely while they're on the road. The dynamic changes, obviously, when you're in a situation where suddenly you need the mainstream staff having that ability. This is also where a lot of the modern collaboration tools like Microsoft Teams really come in handy, because it's a way that you can keep your workforce tied in and communicating pretty seamlessly. So again, good news there is that we've seen a very significant uptake in adoption of Microsoft Teams or Slack or similar solutions over the last 18 months. So again, I think a lot of our client base is already pretty well positioned. It's just a matter of adapting to working from home.
It's really about communication and preparedness. And what you find out in these instances as an MSP, as an IT service provider, is who takes you seriously as a consultant? Who takes you seriously as the MSP? We give great advice. We make great recommendations. And it's the people who have followed it who right now aren't stressing. The vast majority of our clients, this isn't a big pressing thing because they've taken our advice to heart previously and prepared for this. You know, we have clients as small as 7, 8, 10 people and as large as 400 or 500 seats. And the companies that we work with that have their own IT staff, they've got their own systems and their own methods of doing things. So we're not as concerned about the real big ones. But it's the ones that we're fully obligated to for outsourced IT, whether it's full-on managed services or co-managed IT. Those are the ones that we really have to impress upon. You know, hey, let's have some plan in place just in case, and you never know. And luckily, we've done a very good job of finding clients and explaining to clients exactly the benefit of remote secure communications and interactivity. We kind of insist on some things as part of our managed service offering. One of them is secure remote access. That's why we recommend the Sophos firewalls as an example, because we know the SSL VPN built into it is secure and high performance and it works great. It's easy to deploy. We kind of insist on these things up front. So when events like this happen, it's not that big a deal.
So what I'm hearing from you actually is that COVID-19 is not really a big deal in the sense that something like this has been part of your disaster recovery plan for clients all along. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say that having the right solutions for the client to begin with kind of sets the stage. For example, we're a big proponent of Sophos's security solutions, so their firewalls and their endpoint security. And one of the reasons why we're a big fan of Sophos firewalls is because they've got an SSL VPN client built into it. Now, listen, a lot of firewalls have that, but it makes it very easy for us to create the security groups in Active Directory to give people access and then to give them a very straightforward document they can use at home to go to the web page, download the SSL VPN client, install it, and get up and running. It makes it very easy. So we try to think a few steps ahead in terms of what are potential use cases. And, you know, this is one of those use cases.
Now, do you have any clients for whom work from home just isn't possible, like a dentist office, for example, or a retail store?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And so what are you doing in those cases?
We do have clients that have manufacturing plants that have to be running all the time to fulfill their obligations to much larger downstream manufacturers. As a result, they're working the problem. Their approach is, we got to do what we got to do, and let's be careful about it. We have a client that's a brake caliper remanufacturer, and they supply all the big auto chains in North America. And as far as we understand, when we talked to them late last week, was that they're full steam ahead. There's going to be no change in their production schedules or anything because their customers are expecting them to fulfill the orders that they've paid for already. So in those circumstances, their IT needs are same as they were before this all cropped up. So we have to be here to provide for them. Our business continuity and preparedness plan is not unlike our clients. And because we have a voice over IP system for phones, I mean, we can work anywhere. We're prepared in any moment should we either become infected here internally or our client base become infected and there's a risk of us becoming infected. We're all prepared to work from home at full speed as much as we can. So
I was just going to ask, that was my next question, is apart from enabling your clients to work remotely, are you guys starting to work remotely? Are you looking at rotating shifts? Are you trying to decrease truck rolls right now? What's happening from that perspective in on-site client visits?
Everyone on our team is used to working from home. You have someone who's got a sick child. You're waiting for a contractor to show up at home. You don't want to take the whole day off. Oftentimes, you just need an hour of free time at home to do something. So everyone on our staff is accustomed to working securely from home. One of the things that Jim prioritized for us years ago was making sure that we had redundancy throughout the system so that we could connect to all of our resources, that our resources were in secure data centers. All of our key systems are in a FEMA-rated data center. All of our systems are hosted such that if there is an issue locally, we're able to get to those things from wherever we are. And the nice thing about having people that you trust and you know and who really understand what we're trying to deliver in terms of quality of service and in terms of our obligations to our client base, it means that our staff are very comfortable and they've already set themselves up at home. They have all the tools prepared. Everyone's been testing to make sure they're ready. So we're pretty much ready to roll.
Yeah, on any given week, we probably have two or three people working from home. So for us to make that transition to go work from home is we're used to it. Everything's set up and ready to go for it. It goes back to how we handle our clients through these types of events and how we set them up and how we want them to think about being prepared.
Now, you mentioned that you were starting to see an uptick in purchase of Microsoft Teams and other sort of collaboration tools that would enable remote teams 18 months ago. Where do you think that demand was coming from?
Two things. One is, I think Microsoft was very wise in bundling that into all of their subscription services, or the vast majority of them, so it was available. As the workforce and the employment force generally gets younger and gets more technologically savvy, there's less reluctance to use collaborative tools like Teams, as an example. And there's also more of an interest in exploring what tools are out there to use. So it became more common for us to get requests or to talk to clients. We'd go out and have conversations, and they would ask us questions about how do we communicate with a disparate workforce? Because a lot of our clients are doing work from home options just like we are. So I think it was a natural conversation that's evolved over the last 18, 24 months. Having those tools built into the Microsoft Office stack in general has been really helpful.
Yeah, and on top of that, I think to Microsoft's credit, just talking about Teams, but there's Slack and there are other ones out there. I mean, the ease of use that you can get collaboration tools set up and going, and you can do video conferencing, you know, at the push of a button reliably and seamlessly. I mean, that's a huge, huge step forward than it was even 5, 6, 7 years ago. I remember what a pain in the butt it was to set up Skype and get Skype to work. I was in Aruba on vacation and I was having a Teams conversation with Travis and another guy on our staff, like I was in the office. It was fantastic. And it just the ease of use, you can do that from a mobile phone on a wireless network in a foreign country, 2,900 miles away, and just have it work and be seamless and easy and understandable. It makes it more accessible for the average computer user.
You're going to have different businesses where these types of tools will work really well versus won't. We've got manufacturing firms, construction firms who use this stuff quite a bit because you've got people that are in the office. You've got sales representatives who are on the road. So I think a lot of organizations have just naturally become comfortable with these types of remote working tools. And let's be honest here, what's happened in the last 5 years in particular, again, as the workforce has changed, as the nature of business has changed, people are just much more comfortable working not in the same physical location. I think that what's happening right now in terms of the pandemic is going to have some serious long-term repercussions for things like distance learning will become much more widely accepted. I think you're going to find more and more companies that are going to find that, we can reduce our physical real estate footprint because we found that this stuff actually works well. I think what's going to come out of this is going to be very interesting changes to how our country works in general, how businesses are willing to adjust the traditional 8-to-5 work schedule. I think this is a good experiment in the wide adoption of this, of these different ways of doing work.
So we were already seeing sort of an uptick in adoption of these tools, like as you said, 18, 24 months ago. Are you seeing any change in the conversation in the last 2 months since coronavirus has become news?
You mean in the last 72 hours?
Yeah.
The general answer is yes. And we've really begun to invest time and effort in our staff getting up to speed on all the Microsoft subscription services, Teams being one of them. There's Flow. There are all the other ones that they jam into Office 365 now. The ability to offer all these great additional tools that can really help companies modify their business processes positively is something that we're looking at really doing. But I think in general, what this will demonstrate going forward is there's a whole way you can operate a business that's pretty non-traditional and be pretty successful in it. For example, we employ people out of state that are part of our managed services team, and they're interacting with clients up here in Cleveland and interacting with clients all over the country. But those people might live up in New Hampshire, or they might live down in Columbus, Ohio. It doesn't really matter. That's why I think from our perspective, maybe in our clients, there isn't that really that big a deal in all this stuff. I think people are kind of circumspect and going, okay, we'll deal with this. We've got the technology. We've been using it already, and we'll just roll it out instead of the management team. We'll roll it out to everybody. And it seems to be working. No big panic.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by AVIC Networks.
They do say that in a crisis is when you really see your weaknesses. So it sounds like you guys really have things under control. Like you've been planning for something like this. You've got your systems and processes in place. But is there anything as you're coming into this crisis that you're noticing that you would maybe want to shore up or change going forward?
In our internal stuff, I'm sure there's something that will crop up that we'll discover we haven't seen so far because no plan is perfect.
Right.
But I would say that from the client standpoint, one of the areas where we can probably help them more is by having, I won't say having a business continuity plan, because that can be a whole other thing that you get into. But I think helping people with the communications internally and impressing upon people the importance of clear, simple communications in times of crisis. We somewhat joke that our job is to decomplexificate. That's a term that we tend to use internally. From a technical standpoint, we're brought in to simplify environments that have been needlessly overcomplicated or workflows that don't work right. So let's simplify and clarify the communication that takes place during a crisis. Or is there a way that we can help clarify that communication so that it becomes a little bit less stressful? Jim has coached us internally. Our job is to provide convenience. In this case, part of that convenience is giving them some clear communication tools, language, verbiage, et cetera, that they can disseminate to their staff to make this a little bit less stressful and a little bit more seamless.
Are you actively communicating to your clients then, going out and saying, hey, just wanted to reassure you, we're ready, we've got this, or are you getting questions from clients?
We sent out a communication early this week, letting people know basically our philosophy on, again, communication, and this is what we recommend you do internally in your business. Here's four basic steps that you can take internally to make sure you've got communications plan in place. And then we reiterated to our clients what we do as a company to ensure continuity of service. I've sent that out. I've had quite a few responses from our client base asking us for help to help them get some things tweaked and fine-tuned and tested, which is what we fully expected.
We don't really have a clear sense of what is coming next. And I think as a result, people are gradually stepping into this, being thoughtful about it, not just rushing in. So they're asking us questions, and we've kind of made it an internal priority that should people come to us and say, hey, I want to make sure my remote access stuff is working and it's available, can you guys do that? We've made that a little bit more of a priority than some other things so that there's some peace of mind for them and peace of mind for us so that we're not stressing out that somebody needs something right away. From a personnel standpoint, one of the things that we strive to do, Jennifer, is we don't want our staff working 24 hours a day. So we have on-call personnel. And we expect the people at the end of their day to go home and enjoy their evening, enjoy their family, enjoy their life. We've asked people over this coming weekend, hey, let's be available by phone. And if you can chip in to help out in case something does happen, everybody's been amenable to that. Everybody's on board. And that will also help cut down some of the stress and the anxiety of getting things taken care of. Out of our list of about 100 clients, I'd say 85 of them are prepared for this in one way or the other. Like I have said, and I've preached this to Travis for going on almost 15 years, our primary job as an organization really is to provide convenience. We want to make the systems that our clients use convenient. They turn on, they run. The infrastructure, the IT stuff isn't getting in their way of doing their jobs. And we want to make the way they interact with us convenient. We want the communication paths to be open. We want to make a lot of phone calls because a lot of things get lost in translation and emails. But our culture dictates that we want to make everything as easy and convenient as possible for the people who interact with us. Being a little bit ahead of the curve and setting people up with the right equipment makes it a lot less stressful down the road when we have to go to turn these things on or make them available. I dare say we think these things through, but like Travis says, there is no good plan because if the worst case scenario happens or something gets out of control, then we're scrambling.
Now, some MSPs are getting calls from companies that aren't clients yet and saying, my gosh, we need to enable remote workforce. I don't have an MSP yet. Can you help me? Are you seeing any of that?
What we're doing is we're trying to make sure that our existing clients aren't put on the back burner if somebody whom we don't have a relationship with calls in and says, hey, I don't know you, you don't know me, what can I do?
So we have made a determination internally as a managed service provider that unless you want to have a relationship with us, we're going to make doing business together a little bit more difficult. Meaning, if you want to pay hourly, you're going to pay a hell of a lot more. And if you're going to pay hourly, you're going to go to the back of the line. And when we have time for you, we'll get to you. We have people who have signed agreements and pay us what they would consider and what I would consider, you know, very premium dollars, and they're going to get our attention and our affection first. From a business perspective, it also makes it significantly easier for us to deliver our services, and it's easier on our personnel to deliver our services when there are expectations and there are deliverables, as opposed to, hey, we just need to run out and turn something on or run out and set something up. So we made a pretty concerted effort to make sure that we're dealing with contract clients pretty much exclusively. There are occasions when there is an opportunity for a larger managed services engagement. We've had several clients come to us after being crypto locked. They're so desperate, they'll just say, hey, we'll pay anything and we'll sign a contract to make it go because we've heard about you. We know what you can do. And then we go in and we'll clean things up. We'll fix things up. We'll secure them. We'll get everything up and going. And then they become a client. In these situations right now, it comes down to desperation and need. But we're much more picky about what we do and how we do it now because the downstream ramifications for the staff and the company can be pretty bad sometimes.
I think that's an important distinction to make because I think we're going to see a lot of MSPs get approached with new business in the coming weeks and months. And it's going to be really tempting to take whatever comes in through the door. But as you say, not all business is equal. So you kind of have to look at whether this business is really the kind of business that you want.
Absolutely. One of the things that we have determined as a company and as a leadership team is that we will never, ever jeopardize the two things that are sacred in this company. First off is the culture. If there's something that damages our culture, whether it's a client or a person in the company, they will be removed. We will not allow them to damage our culture. And two, we will get rid of whatever damages our service delivery excellence. If there's something, a client or a process or a product or a person, and I don't care what it is, if that is detrimental to our service delivery model or our service delivery excellence, it will be removed also. One of the entry points for that is, are we going to go out there and do business with everybody who walks in the door, everybody who calls? My sales team would love that because they know that there's commissions there. But the reality is the company has to take a look at what that relationship and that engagement looks like for the benefit of both. If it doesn't benefit my company and my people and my culture positively, we're not going to do business with you. And likewise, if you don't accept what we believe as a company in terms of both high performance service delivery, high quality service delivery, and the money that's associated with that, then that's fine. I understand that completely. But we make a determination very early on in the prospecting phase, whether we're going to continue on and get to the proposal phase based on some questions and some conversations that we have with clients to make sure that we do protect our culture and our service delivery model.
Going back to coronavirus, what do you think this is going to mean for MSPs as a whole, the industry, in the next few months? Because I think we can all agree the news is saying it's going to get worse before it gets better. So what's this going to mean for MSPs in the next couple of months?
I think people are still going to be stupid. I think they're going to be people who look at this and, you know, they're going to kind of shrug their shoulders and continue on. And the flip side is there are going to be some people who, you know, I think a smaller segment of the population are going to look at this and go, oh man, we really need to think this through for the long-term benefit or survival of our business. Because let's be honest, the planet every 75 to 100 years has one of these episodes. It was the Spanish flu in 1918 that killed, I can't remember the number, but it was multi-millions, 30 million people worldwide. Not that that's going to happen here, obviously. We don't know. We pray that it doesn't. But you're going to have people that are going to sit back and realize that dollar that they invest in improvement and business continuity now could have a substantial payoff in the future. And that could be anything from more flexible workforce, hiring people around the world, or whatever the case may be. Those people who see the future a little bit more clearly will make that commitment and make that investment. Whereas, unfortunately, I think a lot of people are just going to kind of go about their way, and they're going to look at that as a tremendous expense and burden and not do it.
And you know what, Jennifer, I'll also tell you that I just got a message right before we went on here from a very good friend of mine who works for a large national bank, and they're running into a huge problem because they have outsourced a lot of their back-end technology functions to other countries, primarily in Asia. And the problem is that as those workforce employees in Asia are being sent home, those subcontractors are telling the bank, hey, we're going to have our staff work from home. And this one bank in particular put their foot down and said, oh, no, you're not. There is no way in heck we're going to allow you to work on our systems outside of your offices, which have all the security protocols in place. That's just not an option. So I think that we're going to see people reevaluating, and not in every case, but we have to be cognizant of the fact that you can't do this work from home option everywhere unless you've got proper security protocols in place. And I think it's going to definitely affect some of the offshoring. There's going to be some reconsideration that goes in there.
That's really interesting and not something that I had really thought about before. But also to your point earlier, this could really change long term how companies work and where they work and the hours that they work.
Oh, without question. I mean, one of the things that I was talking to a friend of mine who has some manufacturing over in China right now, and his concern is, should they be affected and have big problems in the area of China that they have their plant? I mean, he's dead in the water. They can't function because they're not going to be able to get product. And that has to be a concern for companies that have offshore call centers. I mean, your entire call center could get wiped out with a virus like this for a period of days, weeks, or months. So it's going to probably cause some companies to reevaluate how they disperse their workforce and probably not concentrate them as much in one area and kind of spread them out all over the place. I don't want to say it's like redundancy of systems, but it's redundancy of human systems, meaning if you can have people answering the phone in 12 time zones, that's better than having everybody in one time zone. So I think we'll see some reevaluation there as well.
Very smart. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me.
That was Jim Milliken, CEO of Ashton Technology Solutions, and Ashton's operations manager, Travis Grunke. I'd love to know your thoughts on this interview. Have your preparations been similar or different to Ashton's? What's been working for you during this time of global change, and where have you wished you'd prepared differently? Hop over to the show notes at avik.com/franklymsp/064 and leave a comment, or come join the conversation on the Frankly MSP LinkedIn community. Search Frankly MSP on LinkedIn to find us. I'll also put a link to the group in the show notes. That URL again is avik.com/franklymsp/064. And that's a wrap. Till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Stay safe out there, and thanks for listening.
Frankly MSP. Brought to you by Avik Networks, the most efficient and profitable way to manage your clients' networks.